They ended up spending decades and decades behind bars for murders they never committed.
This is a True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. You just heard the voice of Steve Neveling, an investigative reporter for the Metro Times in Detroit. Since 2024, he's been covering the case of Barbara Simon, a former detective who has been accused of coercing false statements from hundreds of black men, leading to their imprisonment. Recently, CNN cited his work in an article about this case. In this episode, we're going to dive into some of what goes into bringing criminals to justice, and also what happens when that process goes wrong. We'll hear from Neveling as well as officials from around the country. Before Cole Thomas Allen was caught running through the halls of the Washington, D.C. Hilton during the White House Correspondents' Dinner last Saturday, another crime shocked people in Chicago. According to Block Club Chicago, 26-year-old Alfonso Talley was accused of robbing a Family Dollar store and beating an employee. He was then taken into custody and brought to Swedish Hospital on the city's north side. He had told law enforcement that he swallowed multiple bags of drugs. Talley somehow allegedly managed to hide the gun he used for the robbery while in police custody and as he went through hospital security. Block Club Chicago added that how he did this remains a mystery. As he was getting ready for a CT scan at the hospital, Talley allegedly used the gun to fatally shoot Chicago police officer John Bartholomew and to critically wound Bartholomew's partner. He then allegedly proceeded to run through the hospital, demand car keys from an employee, shoot his way through glass doors, and chase a postal worker in a van before he was seen running naked through the nearby neighborhood. Talley was eventually found hiding under a porch during a manhunt. Records show that Talley has an extensive criminal history and had been on electronic monitoring in the past. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson commented on the case this week. Here's Jeff Buckles of Odyssey Station WBBM News Radio in Chicago reporting.
The first question the mayor fielded during his town hall meeting on Channel 7 was about the record of the suspect in last weekend's death of Officer John Bartholomew.
I'm going to continue to ask that the city of Chicago continue to pray for the Bartholomew family.
And he went on to say details about the suspect's past were still being unpacked. Those details include a missed court date last month and several failed check-ins with his electronic monitor tied to a previous criminal case. He was asked, is the system broken?
I don't think there's a debate around the penal system, the justice system, and its inability to really hold all of the complexity that exists within our society.
He said the time is always ripe to consider changes to make sure the system treats everyone fairly, but did not name specific changes he felt were needed.
What I'm going to do is focus on the things that I can control,
which he said includes supporting the police department and making sure suspects are held accountable. We're at City Hall. Jeff Buckles.
Buckles also reported on Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker's comments on the case, as well as other state politicians.
It's a tragedy what's happened.
And the governor says it could have been avoided if the Cook County judge hearing previous cases against the suspect in Officer Bartholomew's death had paid attention to details of his criminal history and not let him out on electronic monitoring.
The judge should have made the decision to keep that person in jail.
But State Senate Republican leader John Curran joined other GOP lawmakers in Springfield to introduce a proposed change to the law, spelling out that anyone who commits a felony while wearing an ankle monitor must be held behind bars until both cases are closed.
Letting violent offenders out over and over again to commit more violent crimes isn't creating less prisoners. It's creating more victims.
The governor told reporters he has not seen the details of the Republicans' proposal, but repeated that the law as written allows judges to hold potentially violent suspects.
The judge who had the ability to keep the person in jail.
In Wayne County, Michigan, a jury just found another man accused of killing a police officer, Michael Lopez, who was accused of killing Melvindale officer Mohammed Zaid in 2024, guilty.
We, the jury, find a defendant, count one, first-degree murder of a peace officer, or second-degree murder guilty of first-degree murder of a peace officer.
You can move on to the next count.
Count two, felon in possession of a firearm. Guilty of felon in possession of a firearm. Count three, felon in possession of ammunition. Guilty of felon in possession of ammunition. Count four, carrying a concealed weapon. Guilty of carrying a concealed weapon. Count five, controlled substance possession of methamphetamine, ecstasy. Guilty of controlled substance possession of methamphetamine, ecstasy. Count six, controlled substance possession of cocaine less than 25 grams. Guilty of controlled substance possession of cocaine less than 25 grams. Count seven, carrying a dangerous weapon with unlawful intent. Guilty of carrying a dangerous weapon with unlawful.
What you're hearing now is courtroom coverage from Odyssey Station WWJ News Radio in Detroit.
Would you like me to pull the jury?
Yes, please. Please, Your Honor.
Juror in seat number one, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes, it is.
Juror in seat number two, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes.
Juror in seat number three, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes.
Juror in seat number five, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes.
Juror in seat number seven, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes.
Juror in seat number eight, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes.
Juror in seat number nine, was that and is that your verdict?
Yes.
Juror in seat number 10, was that and is that your verdict?
Lopez's sentencing is set for May 22nd. He could face life in prison without the possibility of parole. He's not facing a possible death penalty, in part because Michigan does not have the death penalty, along with 22 other U.S. states, according to the Death Penalty Information Center. A few states away, death penalty sentences are on pause in Pennsylvania. Lawmakers there are considering ending the practice permanently. Here's Odyssey Station KYW News Radio in Philadelphia to explain.
KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melwort reports.
Philadelphia Democrat Chris Robb says the criminal justice system's not perfect, and as long as there can be wrongful convictions, there should be no death penalty.
There are no takebacks here. It's irreversible. It is expensive. And our government does not have the moral authority to put people to death.
In addition to Robb's bill, the State House Judiciary Committee also advanced a similar bill from Republican Russ Diamond, who notes Pennsylvania hasn't carried out an execution since 1999, but with built-in appeals, the costs of a death penalty conviction are significantly higher than life in prison.
A life sentence without the possibility of parole is a harsh penalty and tough justice. Continuing to pursue the death penalty is a moral minefield riddled with far too many flaws and excessive expense for taxpayers.
Both bills advanced, but on the same party line vote, with all Democrats on the committee in favor and all Republicans opposed. Despite the partisan vote, Robb says he's confident there's enough Republican support in both chambers to get the bill to the governor's desk.
Even if suspects are convicted and sentenced, that doesn't mean that all the evidence brought against them is irrefutable. For example, Steve Nieblings has revealed in his reporting that coerced statements have plagued the Detroit justice system. Here's Nieblings' breakdown of his investigation into the matter from an interview with Daryl and Horn of WWJ News Radio.
So what CNN did was essentially re-report what I wrote in a two-part series in 2024, and they outlined what I had reported, which is that Barbara Simon is a retired Detroit homicide detective, and she is responsible for at least eight people so far being released from prison because of unlawful tactics like getting coerced interviews and false confessions and putting innocent black men in prison for decades. So the story followed what has happened, all the allegations against her, and then what has happened since. And the interesting part is, since that series ran, just in the past month, the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office released two victims of Barbara Simon. So we're starting to see some progress in those cases. It's taken 2 years, but the families are very happy that something is finally happening. So CNN just put a lot of put a big spotlight on this case nationally. And I think that sort of adds to the pressure that's facing prosecutors and police to investigate Barbara Simon's tactics for two decades that landed a lot of people who are innocent behind bars. Okay, so she retired in 2010, so she must have been there between about 1990 and 2010. And at one point, she was the head of the homicide division for the Detroit Police Department, and she was able to get confessions and witness statements that other police officers were not able to get. We later found out that was because of coerced confessions and coerced witness statements, but she was so effective at getting these statements that they called her the closer. The problem was a lot of those statements were not actual statements. They were written by her, and the suspects in these cases were accused of murders, and they ended up falsely confessing, hoping that they would get out of jail and be able to argue their case. And she made false promises to get them to do that. And as a result, they ended up spending decades and decades behind bars for murders they never committed.
Which is so sad, because what does she gain?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sad part. It's in the late 1990s, there was a lot of pressure on the prosecutor. There's a lot of pressure on the Detroit Police Department to secure convictions, because Detroit was sort of becoming a laughingstock. The murder conviction rate was really low. So there was a lot of pressure put on the police department to try to get these convictions. The only problem is they were getting convictions, but they weren't paying attention to whether or not those were real convictions or false convictions. And what we later found out is a lot of these people actually were innocent. And what they would do when there was a murder in the late 90s and early 2000s is they would, if there was a murder on a single block in Detroit, they would take almost everybody on that block who lives on that block who could have been a possible eyewitness, and they would arrest them, and they would take them downtown, and then they would threaten them. So if any of them had previous charges, or if police knew they had something else on them, they would threaten them unless they were able to identify a suspect. And oftentimes they encouraged them to identify a certain suspect. And that's how they were able to get that closure rate back up, that conviction rate back up. But as a result, unfortunately, many, many of those people who ended up in prison were innocent. And the thing that was really sad about this is in the 1990s and early 2000s, the Justice Department came and investigated the Detroit Police Department, and they honed in on the homicide department. And what they found was the exact same thing, that there were interrogations taking place that weren't being recorded. People were falsely confessing. And the city signed a consent agreement with the Justice Department, but nobody ever thought to go back and look at all the people who were convicted during that period. So when I went back at that period and looked at it, there were a lot of people who have very similar stories about either falsely confessing or witnesses being coerced or threatened in order to pinpoint a suspect. And oftentimes those cases unraveled later in appeals courts. But, you know, there's still a lot of people who are behind bars who say Barbara Simon did the exact same thing to them. In fact, I'm having a story come out tomorrow listing about 20 more people who are still in prison for murder, even though they say they're innocent. And all of them say they were victimized by Barbara Simon.
You said at least 20?
Yeah, at least 20.
Gosh.
Yeah, I talked to all 20 of them.
And
they're still in prison. And the sad thing is, this, I have focused on probably before that about a dozen to 20 people who are still in prison prior to this, that as a result of Barbara Simon. And none of those people have received a call from the prosecutor's office saying their cases are reviewed. So there's a lot of concern that the people who've been cooperating with this story to help shed light on it are the ones who are going to stay behind bars because they helped blow the whistle on this. So there's a lot of concern about that. The two people who were recently released were not people that I talked to. So these additional 20 that I am going to reveal tomorrow, you know, they're hoping that some exposure is going to bring them justice. And, you know, only time will tell, but it's been almost 2 years, and so far only two people have been released.
So Kim Worthy is another name I keep hearing about when it comes to these what do you call them, exonerating or convictions. Like she's accused of not looking into these cases when she said she would, and just kind of giving people false hope. What do you say to that?
Yeah, this has been an interesting journey dealing with the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, because on one hand, you have a lot of people who say they're innocent, and families have been begging them to meet with her. And when my series first ran, she said they would meet with the families, but she never did end up meeting with them. So a lot of the families are really frustrated. You know, they know what happened to their loved one. They know that the circumstances are very similar to what happened with Barbara Simon. So the prosecutor's office ended up getting a grant in order to assemble a team in their innocence department. And they started looking at these cases full time, probably about a year ago. The issue is it takes a really long time to go through those cases to determine who's innocent and who's not, because you don't want to put you know, someone who did commit a murder back on the street. So the prosecutor's office is starting to do something, but the families still feel that the prosecutor's office isn't going fast enough, because this was, in fact, a prosecutor's office's problem. They knew that Barbara Simon had been getting these false confessions and allowed it to continue and fought to keep these men behind bars.
What do you feel like the CNN article could do at this point?
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, it's a national platform. What do you think is going to come from it?
Yeah, I think that CNN covering this is going to bring more attention to what happened in Detroit. Oftentimes, and it's sad, is that you need local and national coverage in order to get the justice system to work properly. And in these cases, you need judges, prosecutors, police, all to get involved in this and make a real concerted effort to find out who is innocent. And get them out of prison, because we know that so far 8 people have been released as a result of this. But what is happening to all the others? I mean, I think we've counted now more than 30 who are still in prison, still waiting. And I talked to many of them, and I think everyone I talked to said they have not heard a single word from the prosecutor's office. So they're really worried that their case is not going to get a serious review. But I think what this does is put pressure on the right folks to do the right thing this time, since it was really egregiously messed up the last time.
Yeah, and that's some progress, but we'll have to see what comes of it. So I know you mentioned that there was going to be some new information coming out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you could tell us right now what we're going to see?
20 additional people who are still in prison and say they were victimized by Barbara Simon. All of them have almost the exact same story. They said they were accused of a murder. They were taken downtown. They were denied a lawyer. They were denied a phone call. And then they were told that they had enough evidence against these suspects that they might as well sign a confession by Barbara Simon that she wrote herself in hopes of getting second-degree murder and to get out of jail until the trial started. Well, none of that actually happened. Every single one of them who confessed never got out of jail, and they never got to make their phone call that they're entitled to, never got access to an attorney until they confessed. So these are people who have been waiting and waiting, who've been denied time and time again by the same courts, denied and denied again by the same prosecutors. And these people desperately want a review of their case. They're not asking to just be released. They're just asking for prosecutors to take a closer look, for judges to take a closer look. And I think now that we know that many of these confessions have been coerced, if any of these cases were before a jury now, Barbara Simon's words would have no credit, no credibility. And the issue with this is, in most of these cases, there's no forensic evidence. It's only Barbara Simon's word against the murder suspects. And these murder suspects have the exact same story. So they're eerily the same. And I'm so worried that we still have men who are in prison 2-3 decades and have lost their family members and desperately want to get out, and they're just getting no relief. And it's really sad.
Throughout the country, there are law enforcement agencies, lawmakers, and policymakers striving to make the justice system work better for victims and for those accused. Here's a bit of St. Louis prosecuting attorney Melissa Price Smith's interview with Dave Glover at KMOX in St. Louis to end our show today.
What was it like going from, you know, 19 years of working your way up to being the boss? That had to be kind of weird.
You know, it was extremely weird. And the majority of those years, although I did all types of crime, the majority of those years, I prosecuted sexual assault and child abuse cases. So those cases were my heart. I mean, they still are. It was an honor to work on those cases with the victims were the bravest people that I've ever met. So I really thought that I would work on those type of cases for the rest of my career. So the day I was sworn in, January 3rd of 25, we reinstated our violent crime unit that afternoon. Very, very proud of that. And that is the number one step we had to take. That unit had been suspended 2 years before, but we had to take that step in order to get violent offenders off the streets. We also created a homicide unit. We have 270 pending homicide cases in our office right now. So we created a homicide unit. We recruited 4 veteran prosecutors from the U.S. Attorney's Office to come to our office and help us build that homicide unit and train our young lawyers.
Yeah.
We created a hospital violence unit. I had not realized, I was taught by a very special nurse who was a victim on one of my cases a few years ago, that our healthcare workers are assaulted quite frequently. About 55% of healthcare workers report being assaulted on the job. But for years, it has been seen as a job hazard. So we created a dedicated hospital violence unit to protect our healthcare workers and hold those accountable who think it's okay to assault healthcare workers. We also expanded our sexual assault child abuse unit. It's now called Special Victims Unit because under that umbrella, we now included elder abuse. Those cases also need a specialized team. They need specialized attention. Yeah.
Both vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely. We have created a cold case unit because we're very aware that cases go unsolved. There are victims, there are families and victims out there that they don't have the closure. So we look at cold cases in cooperation with police departments because we want to bring, though, even if it's been years, 10, 20, 30 years, we still want to bring those families closure. We have also increased our treatment court and diversion. We've doubled it. We've doubled the amount of attorneys that work in those areas because we know how very important it truly is. And we have increased our community outreach 1,000%. The more we get out into the community and talk and listen, the better community we'll have. And we also speak to high schools a lot. I think the more we speak to young people, if we can help one young person avoid ever being in the criminal justice system, it's worth it.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to WWJ News Radio in Detroit, KNX News in Los Angeles, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, KRLD 1080 in Dallas, The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis, A New Morning out of WBEN News Talk in Buffalo, and WBBM News Radio in Chicago. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.